Hey, what's up, everybody? Welcome to Screen Geeks Radio, episode 96. This is Dave.
This is Barry.
And this week we are joined by a very special guest. We're talking about the Stars Denver Film Festival, the movie geek goddess of Cinematical. That's right, I said it. Yeah, Elizabeth Rapp, thank you for joining us.
Yay!
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, I think let's just talk about it. We're the main topic. I don't even know if we're going to have a break this week. We want to get something out before the Thanksgiving holiday in case we don't get something out for the Thanksgiving holiday. So let's just talk about what hit theaters this past weekend, and we'll get jump right into the fest.
Currently the number one movie in the world. $140.7 million grossing in its open weekend, Twilight Saga: New Moon. If you haven't heard of this movie, you are Amish. Also opening, Planet 51 with the voice of Dwayne Johnson. No one saw that over the weekend. On the other hand, The Blind Side, directed by the guy who made The Rookie and all sorts of good movies, starring Sandra Bullock, currently the biggest opening she's ever had.
Really?
So I guess Blind Side 2, Cruise Control, coming soon. Or The Blind Side 2, Armed and Fabulous, coming soon.
Dude.
So, also in limited release, one of my favorite movies of the year, and Dave can concur, this Werner Herzog's Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans, with Nicolas Cage in Exhibit.
I hope you don't mind me quoting you in my review of that, Elizabeth.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Okay.
I'm so bummed I didn't get to see it. I'm going to pay money to go see it. I don't care. I'm so mad that I missed it.
But we were talking at the Troll 2 screening, and you were like, it has a colon, and it's a super long name. How can you not have fun with this?
Yeah, I felt really bad because I was really hyper when I was talking to you guys, but it's so true. And it makes me act. I don't think New Orleans is actually Port of Call anymore. I mean, is it?
I don't think so, no. It's
yeah, that's what I love about it. It's so pretentious. Like, you know, Bad Lieutenant, colon, Port of Call, comma, New Orleans.
It is a heck of a ride.
Yeah,
I firmly believe that, like, because of this, if Johnny Blaze was on coke in Ghost Rider, it would have been a better movie.
Mm.
Yeah, I think pretty much Nicolas Cage on coke would be, like, fantastic, like The Wicker Man and maybe Bangkok Dangerous.
Would have made more sense, I guess.
Yeah.
Well, this movie didn't make any sense, but it's so much fun.
I think it made sense. I think it really made fun of, like, the whole crime movie genre. It's like it kept making fun of all the expectations of it. I was talking to Marty about it, like, you know, how halfway through the movie, like, a character decides to go to rehab or
for a joke. That's
yeah,
the best part of
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And, like, you know, all, like, the super-duper happy things that happen towards the end of the movie. It's like, you know, the whole movie's completely just having fun with itself.
So, absolutely. Yeah, it's so worth checking out. And then there's you saw
I did
the
see Twilight. Oh, I'm sorry.
And you saw Twilight, yes.
Yeah.
I figured we'd end on the Twilight.
Okay, yeah. I saw Blind Side. Blind Side was ridiculous. It has no balls. It's a toothless movie. I'm sorry, but it's like I mean, like I said it for a Wild 105 review, you know, it's like if it makes freaking Remember the Titans look like Any Given Sunday. Like, it has no guts or edge or honesty to it. It's Disney TV Movie of the Week cute. It's a Hallmark movie made. I didn't like this movie at all. It's cheesy cornball movie.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, I'm tempted to post that review because that was a really funny review.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
I had fun giving it.
Now, did you see any of the releases at all this week, Elizabeth?
I didn't because Saturday I spent at the Denver Film Festival. And then, I just can't. I'll probably see Twilight on, like, DVD, which is how I saw the other ones. I'm not going to spend money to see it.
Good. Well, good for you.
Barry took the bullet.
Wow. I did.
Man.
You know, it's not as, you know, the best thing you say about it, it's an improvement over the first one. The things that they improved on are the special effects are excellent. I mean, so much better than even the trailer indicates.
Even the fluffy werewolves?
Yes, like really good.
Yeah, I mean, the trailer is bad.
The trailer was terrible, but no, like they really did a lot of work on it, apparently since the trailer. The effects I thought are terrific. The music's good. The first one had a really lame score by Carter Burwell, and I love Carter Burwell, but his score sucked. This new movie has a real lyrical score. It's really good, and it's beautiful to look at. Remember the first one, the whole thing was shot with that ugly, like, blue tint? This one is like, it's visually a great movie to look at. Everything else is terrible. This script, it goes on forever. The acting is still especially bad from the three leads. I mean, really painfully bad. This is about, like, it's supposed to, they make all these allusions to Romeo and Juliet. There's no feeling of passion here. There's no feeling of loss by any of the actors, who don't do any acting at all. And here's what's really bizarre. Like, there's, and this isn't a spoiler, but late into the movie, the location changes to Italy, and it becomes like the sequence in Interview with the Vampire. You know, with Antonio Banderas. Yeah, it's like those
Theater of the Vampires.
Exactly. Yeah. It becomes like that, and like Dakota Fanning shows up as this little vampire girl, and they don't give her really anything to do but like flash her contact lenses. It's this weird sequence, because it's like all of a sudden the whole movie kind of comes to life, and you're like, oh, this is interesting, this is really different. And then the scene ends, and it's back to the woods and back to the house, and, you know, back to I love you, I have no feeling. You know, the whole thing is just, it's the worst type of bad movie, because it gives you promise that it's going to get good. Like, there's some good scenes in this, I swear. There are a few good scenes, and the special effects are good, and I kept thinking, oh, this is going to get better. I'm actually going to give this movie a shot. No, it gives you hope and with nothing in return.
Yeah, you know, the books were like that too. I don't remember them as well as my sister did. I read very quickly, and I just sort of almost like skimmed it, you know, just to get the gist of things so I could write about them. And you know, the books are like that too. It's like every time that you think something's cool is gonna happen, like a war or some sex or something, it just totally like it. The chapters would literally jump. Like. And the scene you're talking about, the whole Italy thing, was very similar. It's I didn't remember, because I was like doing a character guide for Movie Phone, and I'm telling my sister, oh man, I forgot how many characters are in that book. It just goes on and on. She's like, yeah, I remember, they only show up for like 2 seconds. And I was like, I guess they do. I mean, I just am so used to like thinking of it as this over arc of, you know, things, which implies it's so much more epic than it is. But yeah, it was really, like, that was one of my sister's big complaints. And when I read it, like, I was like, I have to read it, you know, to see if this is true. It literally will do that, like, you know, oh, we're on the verge of a battle. And then the next chapter will be like, wow, that was a tough battle. Like, it literally and, you know, and skip the cool parts. Like, Twilight is a story without the cool parts.
Now, that's what they need to put on the posters.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this, though, because I'm a 32-year-old male, so, like, the argument is always against me. Well, you don't know what you're talking about. In fact, I have a whole letters of people who, like, sent me letters to review that I published about that. The argument is that, you know, this is not really my type of movie, but did you read the books or particularly see the first movie and think, yes, I relate to this. Falling in love for the first time was like this, or, you know, getting dumped by your vampire boyfriend was like this. I mean, did you – I don't know. Like, did these books ring true for you?
No, they don't ring true for me at all. I argue for them as, you know, that girls like them because it doesn't ring true. I mean, I'm sort of perplexed at the argument that, you know, well, Bella, and I have made it, well, Bella's in every girl. Well, I don't, by that I meant like, oh, well, she's like a view master to the point that you can project into her and then you can pretend it's all happening to you. But I think it's like reading really elevated romance, like, you know, G-rated Harlequin or like Wuthering Heights or something. It's like Wuthering Heights was actually one of, before it became Bella and Edward's favorite book, it was actually one of my favorite books. And like, none of it, like, I read it, you know, as a teenager, and it's like, of course you think, oh, maybe this is what love is like, but I don't think they're, you know, relatable on that level. I think it's like what you imagine love to be or something like that, or the obsession or something. I don't think they're relatable, and I don't think that's the point. I mean, I think girls are saying that as a defense of, you know, yeah, I don't know, because I just don't think they're real, and I don't think that that's why girls are reading them, in my opinion. I don't think you actually read them going, oh, I can really relate to this.
Okay,
you know, I go like, oh, wow, I wish this would happen to me. But you, deep down in your mind, you're like, this would really suck if this happened to me, so.
Okay, because I was just curious about that, because the whole time I'm watching the movie with Julie, I'm going, you know, this is interesting, because there's subtext here, because, like, Bella is telling Edward, you know, I want you to, you know, to change me, to bite me, I want you to be my first. I mean, subtext, we're talking about her virginity. There's all this interesting stuff about, you know, the Cullen clan being these pasty white guys with Luke Perry hair versus the werewolves who are all, you know, Native Americans. I'm like, this is interesting. There's some kind of subtext here, but the movie doesn't have the guts to, like, pursue it. But I kept... But, you know, I kept sticking with the movie thinking that they're really going to do something here because they're setting up all this stuff, but they never do.
Yeah, and I think that that's the thing of the books, too, is that... And, I mean, my sister's much more into, like, vampires and, you know, that kind of thing, and werewolves. She was a big fan of Underworld. Like, I had my Anne Rice phase, and then I grew out of it, and I just haven't really followed the mythology in recent years or something, but... I mean, I feel like that's a thing with the books, is that there's a lot of symbolism and promise, and to me it's because she cobbled... Now, I know Stephanie Meyer claims she has never read a vampire book and never seen a vampire movie, and my sister's always called foul on that because she said so much of it seemed ripped off of Underworld, and I think that she cobbles together things that maybe she doesn't quite understand, like... And that's why things don't quite come together. Like, the, you know, like you were saying about the, you know, these guys are sort of bloodless versus these guys that are very, like, in touch with nature and are earthy.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, maybe she's pulling that from other stuff and kind of slapping it in the book and not really understanding what she's putting down in a way. And I'm sure we're going to get hate mail for that. But
I'm okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the impression I got looking at them and reading them and seeing the movies. It's just like, I feel like she's cobbling together things that she doesn't quite understand, and mythology she doesn't understand, and, I think that that's why they feel sort of unrealized. I think the books are unrealized in a lot of ways, and I think the movies are so intent on staying loyal to the fans and everything that they don't, you know, nobody rewrites a script to kind of, well, we could actually add something to this and really make it rich for people not familiar with the books or something, but they don't.
There are instances where a movie has improved on the source material. Isn't one of them.
No. This is the source material, you know, and that, I think that's what the audience wants, you know, at least for now. Yeah. So,
and I don't know. It's like maybe, you know, 10 years from now, maybe when the frenzy dies down, maybe somebody could take them and make, you know, run with it and really make something original. I don't know.
Maybe we'll get special editions a la Star Wars, but it'll be better.
Yeah.
The like special edition.
All the good parts will be put back in, all the sex and all the violence. Which again, I mean, I always get that. Well, that's not the point. The sex isn't the point. It's the waiting and it's the longing.
That's
like,
right. Oh, that's
I just
right.
I want the sex scenes. Come on.
Well, you know, I'll tell you what. This movie, it knows who its audience is, because I looked around and I was the one other guy. There was only one other guy in the whole theater, and man alive, you guys, like the whole time, cat calls, applauding, whistling. I thought it was like at a Chip and Dale show. Like, oh man, like oh, he's so gorgeous. Oh my god, he's so hot, like the whole movie. And when the scenery finally changes to Italy, the girl to the like the far left of me, she goes, oh, it's so gorgeous. It was like the first time she wasn't talking about Robert Pattinson. She was talking about the scenery.
You know, I have to say, like, when I went to Comic-Con last year and I had to cover the Twilight press conference that was there, I really expected something magical to happen, like, because I really wasn't getting into the Twilight, and I wasn't really feeling the Robert Pattinson thing, and I thought, well, maybe if I see this guy in person, like, I will just, like, become obsessed. Like, I mean, I didn't actually think this was going to happen, but I thought maybe I will finally understand his appeal, and I didn't. It was really, odd to see them in person, because Taylor Lautner is so much, and no offense to the guy, because he got very beefy, and it's probably beefier than a lot of guys in the world, but not the biggest guy. Like, I think you probably saw that thinking he was like the size of like the guys in 300. He's really not. It's only because the rest of them are so freaking tiny that he looks huge. And it was kind of like, I was, so they were all walking out, and I'm like within like breathing distance of Pattinson, and can't really say I was just like, you know, blown away. And I actually tweeted this and got some flack back, not as much as I expected, because I was like, okay, I've seen him in person, and yeah, you know, I gotta say, I'd rather have, you know, Gerard Butler, Hugh Jackman, or 79-year-old Clint Eastwood. And I got a lot of, how can you say that, oh my god, he's so beautiful. And I just had to laugh. But I didn't get as much hate as I was expecting. I was expecting a lot of like people to unfollow me, but it didn't happen.
Well, it kind of brings in the whole McConaughey factor. I have to do this because it reminds me of it. There's like been this theory that the more shirtless that Matthew McConaughey is in a movie, the better the opening box office. So you've got We Are Marshall that had 0 seconds. It made 6.1 million opening weekend. EdTV had 46 seconds of him as shirtless, did 8.3 million. Reign of Fire was 1.6 minutes, 15.6 million. Sahara had 1.8 minutes, 18.1 million. And then Fool's Gold had 14.6 minutes and made 21.6 million.
I just want to point out to all you listeners that my friend Dave found this chart on the internet. He didn't go down and sit and watch these movies and come up with this. So
oh, good.
Just want to make very clear.
I appreciate that, sir.
I was like, wow, what research.
I know. We're very thorough over
here. It's an Entertainment Weekly article.
Okay, yeah. There you go.
And I think there's something to be said for that. I don't find McConaughey appealing in the slightest, but I suppose, like, you know, it's like a cake or death kind of thing. It's like, would you rather die or watch a movie with him shirtless? Like, I'd rather watch a movie with him shirtless. Thank you.
Well, and justified or not, it's kind of like the whole Megan Fox thing with Transformers 2. I'm sure that's a lot of the reason why a lot of people went to see that movie.
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand it personally, but yeah.
I still haven't seen Transformers 2, to be honest.
Good on you. Good on you.
Yeah, you're not missing anything. In fact, I'd recommend Twilight New Moon over Transformers 2. I really would.
Well, at least there's some scenes of, like, Italy, right? I mean, you know.
There's something to be liked.
No, yeah, there is stuff there that's good. There's nothing in Transformers 2. There's nothing. Nothing is there. It's a void. It's an abyss.
And not the good abyss.
Let your moviegoers go and do not return.
That's right.
Not with their sanity intact, at least. All right, let's
just rock it back and forth.
That kind of makes – okay, I'm leaving it alone. We've done so much Transformers 2 bashing around here.
Yeah, we have.
We can give it a break, at least for this week. This week, we're going to talk about the Stars Denver Film Festival. How many movies did you see this year, Barry?
42. That was my final count.
Good night.
But that's still nothing because there were 200 films at the festival this year, so I didn't even see half. And I don't even know if you can see half. I don't know who has. Lisa Kennedy, you know, Denver Post reviewer, she said in her blog that you're lucky if you see even 20 this year. So I feel pretty good. I think I might have seen more than she did, but that's still too many. But not enough. Like there's just huge swarm of movies. And I think one of the reasons that there's so many films is some of these are short movies. Like I think they said the shortest one at the festival this year, I'm sure you got that email, was like 2 minutes long.
Yeah.
Whereas the longest one was like 3.5 hours long. But I saw 42.
And how many – this is what, your third year going?
Yes. Yeah, that I've been going as a festival goer. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. And Elizabeth, how many did you catch this year?
Oh, God. I'm ashamed. I only saw four.
That's okay.
That's okay.
I got sick. I got snowed in. It's like everything was against me. I swear. It was just one of those. And then I had a bunch of deadlines come up, and I couldn't go down there during the week.
That's okay. We have the hour drive each way. So, yeah, I totally
know what you're doing. I'm like, you know, 2 hours away. So it's a little tough.
Dang. Well, it was a tough year for the fest because, you know, that opening night thing got canceled because of the snow. So
the pressure screening? Or
not the pressure screening. Remember the press night that we were supposed to go to? I mean,
there
was a lot of stuff that got postponed because of the weather this year.
And, was this your first year going? Or?
Yeah, this was my first year. Like, every year I've either been in school or traveling or something during the festival. So it's like, wow, I can actually go. And then I kind of didn't make it down there as much as I wanted. So, yeah.
I understand that. This was my second year, I guess, if you count last year when we saw what? His Name Was Jason and The Wrestler. Mm-hmm. That's all I saw last year. But this is my second year. I actually saw 14 movies, which is not quite as many as I wanted to, but
it's still a lot.
It is. And I've kind of hit the wall with movies. I might be kind of done watching movies for the year at this point. I wish I was, at least. So since this was your first year going, Elizabeth, what do you think of the general atmosphere and stuff at the festival?
Atmosphere's really, you know, it's good. Like, I was, we all went to the best worst movie in Troll 2 one together. And I was hoping that it would sell out more and that, you know, because there were still some seats. And, you know, especially for Troll 2, I was hoping that that best worst movie would have a lot of spillover. Instead, it just seemed like it was a bunch of, like, nerds that heard about it on the internet. So it was just us, you know? No offense to us. Our people, you know? It was double. Like, I wanted it to be more than our people. Or even, you know, like newly converted more than, you know.
Absolutely.
But yeah, I don't know. I was kind of weirded out by the atmosphere that was at the Young Victoria. I kind of got the impression that for a lot of people in Denver, the film festival, film is just something that they like the concept of rather than maybe the actual study of, because it was just like such a society event that I was really caught off guard and felt really out of place. It was very strange. I expected a lot more, like, yeah, you know, movies, woo! And it was just sort of like, oh, you know, we were just watching a film. And it was like, oh, that's not really...
kind of defeats the purpose of a film festival.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little mixed about some of the... Because it's like, yeah, the stars, and you go in, like, there's always, like, a crowd, and it seems like everything is sold out, and it's crazy, and then, I don't know, sometimes it just doesn't carry through to the end of the film sometimes. I don't know. So I don't see what you guys think.
Well, for me, it always differs, because some of these movies, you know, like, I mean, I can imagine that, you know, over at the Opera House where they had some of those screenings, that, you know, it's very, very resigned because everybody's all dressed up and it really is more about the event than the film itself, or just to be seen, because, you know, you get those red carpet premieres. But for me, Denver's always been a real movie town. I always get a real sense of enthusiasm, not only from these particular events, but like from the midnight screenings that they have, you know, and I've always thought Denver was a real movie town. And for like the right film, you know, they just go nuts for this stuff. I mean, like, they're still talking about last year, like the response for like when Slumdog Millionaire opened up the fest. I mean, you could, the word is, and I wasn't there for that, but the word is that you could just kind of feel it in the air that this movie was really going to go a long way, because that audience was just nuts for that film.
Interesting.
Yes, I think that, I mean, I definitely think there's a lot of film fans here, and I don't mean to say that there aren't at all. I think that's the thing, is I think in a lot of ways some of this stuff feels very inaccessible. I mean, it's hard to get downtown, the parking's kind of crap, you know, and I think the film festival maybe needs to look at possibly relocating or consolidating better into one location, because I think a lot of people just get kind of left out of the loop. Don't know what's going on, or, you know, kind of get shut out by just the sheer like hurdles of getting there. And maybe I'm just projecting myself into that.
No, you make a really good point, because I mean, I'm very spoiled. The screenings I've always gone to have always been, with just a few exceptions, have always been at the Tivoli Center, which always, you know, when I always get free validated parking over there. I've only been to one screening at a Denver Film Fest, and this was years ago, for a movie that was showing at the Buell. But yeah, like, I mean, I don't know. So they don't have any like validated parking to park in the Buell?
Well, I don't know about, yeah, how that works. I was told that they would validate my parking at the Tivoli. We parked at the Tivoli, and then it was a bit of a screw up, because I didn't look at the ticket. It was my bad. But to get all the way to the L.A. Calkins from the Tivoli was a big pain. And yeah. I feel like, you know, maybe they, you know, because everything else was there. And then you had to go all the way over there for just the Young Victoria or the Last Station, if that's what you were seeing that night. And, you know, it's hard. Like, maybe they should have like a shuttle or something, because, you know, it's kind of hard. It's hard to get. You can't really walk if you're, especially if you're dressed nicely for that, you know, opera night or whatever.
Yeah.
It's hard to walk. The trains do not run on time, so...
Yeah, that's the truth.
You know, yeah, so it's hard. And I think scattering a lot of the stuff to Boulder is difficult, especially because we do have such crappy weather here. Like, I really wanted to see Bad Lieutenant, but the other screening being up in Boulder, kind of, and then with the snow coming, made it really impossible to get up there, and it was... I think that was one that I really wish they'd added like some extra screenings or kept even just in downtown, because I think I would have loved to have seen that. And I think a lot of people would have.
That's a really good suggestion. I mean, we'll definitely come up with a few suggestions of things they could do to improve the fest. That's a really good one. I like the idea of a shuttle. And I want to jump on that Boulder thing really quick that you brought up, Elizabeth. It never fails to amuse me, the movies they select for Boulder, because, like, you know, what they always do for listeners who don't know what we're talking about, you know, we've got Denver, the Denver Film Festival, they've got all the big festivals, but then, like, for Boulder, which is a real college town and confidentially also a very enthusiastic ganja town, they have, like, a certain amount of screenings, you know, available from the Denver Film Fest. Well, you know, I love it. Like, they never have, like, the prestigious movies, like the Young Victoria or, you know, or something, you know. know, or like the Ed Harris movie I saw, Touching Home. No. This is what they showed at Boulder this year. They showed Bad Lieutenant. They showed Best Worst Movie in Troll 2. And they showed Leaves of Grass with Edward Norton, which is certainly a Cheech and Chong movie in disguise. So I just want to point
really?
That out.
Because like, it didn't, like, the description sounded so serious.
No. That is a pot movie and a half, believe me. So, I just love that. It's always okay. Drugs, stoners, trolls, Boulder.
Yeah, it's so, like, when I saw what was up there, it was like, well, they're catering to a certain crowd with these. I mean, I didn't know about Leaves of Grass other than the title. I thought they were trying to trick them into
no,
that.
No. That is the leaves they're talking about. Yeah.
But, it's... I don't know. I don't... Like, I understood taking Best Worst Movie up there for Boulder, but I didn't really understand taking, like, running second screenings up there and having no way to... Yeah. I felt really bad for people going up, like, the Best Worst Movie crew. I was like, man, I hope they get up to Boulder okay. Like, I hope somebody's driving them.
Yeah.
Yeah, no kidding. Do we want to just go through the suggestions now? That way we can kind of get the quote-unquote
sure.
negative stuff out of the way. Then we can talk about
yeah.
the movies we saw that
sure,
we
okay.
liked.
Well, hey, let's get the King Center out of the way. Let's just talk about that right now.
I...
Okay, I'll
quite,
say.
Quite, no, no,
it
no,
was like
no.
this last year. It's been like this the 2 years that you and I have gone, Dave.
Yeah.
Where the sound has not been adequate for that. That this is the biggest, I think, the biggest theater that they have for the film fest. It seats a lot of people. They even have balcony seating. It's a really great seating area, but the sound system, even last year, sucks. It's either at the point where you cannot even so much as clear your throat, or you might miss something, or worse, in the case of the film we saw last night, where there is so much going on, there's so much chaos in the film that once sound overlaps another and you hear the noise or you'll hear the music or you'll hear the dialogue, but not all at the same time. And I think we missed 55% of the dialogue of our movie
in
last
Dr.
night?
Parnassus? Absolutely. I saw three movies in there this year. I saw Bad Lieutenant, Up in the Air, and Parnassus. Bad Lieutenant and Up in the Air, you were able to hear most
of it. You saw Pollywood too.
Oh, I saw Pollywood in there too. Yeah. Good God. Every single movie I saw there, first of all, had a break at some point where the movie stopped for some technical reason. But second of all, as long as there was no like serious as long as it was mostly dialogue, you could hear everything. It could be kind of hard to hear at times. But with something like a Terry Gilliam movie, for really? I mean, with all the sound effects, with the music, with just the pure spectacle that a Gilliam film is, we literally couldn't hear half the movie. I mean, it is probably my favorite movie of the fest, but it's like I almost feel like it's unfair to try to review it. Like, I think Gilliam would have been pissed.
Oh, no question. His movies are tough to follow anyway the first time because they're so complex. And not being able to hear all the sound did not help.
Like, I have no idea what that whistle was for.
Oh, neither do I. I have no idea.
Yeah, but it had magical properties to it, and they never explained them at all.
Yeah, anyway.
I would have to say I saw the Evening with Ed Harris thing there. And I was really surprised at how bad that sound was. So it isn't just necessarily the soundtrack of a film. I mean, these were two guys that had microphones, and I couldn't understand like anything Ed Harris said.
Wow.
And it was unfortunate. And you know, speaking of the enthusiasm, man, people were so excited to see him. It was actually kind of funny. Like it turned into this almost like Comic-Con atmosphere, with people just shouting questions from the stage, just kind of geeking out that Ed Harris had come to Denver, and it was. It was very sweet.
I can relate.
Yeah, the sound was terrible. Like his film clips were actually really, you know, those were fine, but I could not hear him at all. And as far as presentation, I'd have to throw in that the L.A. Calkins is not a place to watch a movie either, because same thing, sound you couldn't hear the sound, terrible print quality. It cut out. It went colors, and I think that's a really I don't know where they could move it. I don't understand, like, you know, how you license maybe a multiplex or something. But I think these are films that do deserve a better presentation, and I think it's unfortunate that they get... You know, maybe it's just a Denver thing, because we don't have enough locations or something, but to put them in places that aren't designed for movies is a really, I think, really hurts.
Yeah, and for these big screenings, it's like... at least a program, like spread it out more. If you're going to put it on one of the smaller screens with good sound, just have like two or three screenings of Parnassus and where people could see it. And here's another thing. If they have to show something at the King Center, why not show a foreign film that has subtitles? Because that would solve one of the problems. You know, I wouldn't have minded watch Life is Beautiful or something in that theater because, you know, I got the dialogue. Just as long as I hear the music, I'm fine.
Yeah, I think that's a very good idea. I think it's, you know, it's the King Center. That's my English department building. It's a very nice building, but maybe not the best place to watch a lot of films. And same with the Opera House. It's like it's great for seeing an opera, but maybe not so much for watching movies. It's just not designed that way, you know.
No. Yeah, with the King Center, I don't know if it's that they could improve the speakers. I don't know if that would help or not. I mean, I don't think it would hurt. Because the acoustics are pretty bad in there as it is, but at least for watching a movie.
Yeah.
It's weird. They do like live performances in there. And I was kind of, I've only ever seen one the entire time I was at Metro. And I remember the sound being really good. So, yeah, is it something to do with, their actual stereo as opposed to people projecting voices from the stage? Not sure.
Apparently good for the oboe, not for Heath Ledger.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was that we saw the movie with Jamie and Kyle Winans from Inc. And they were horrified. When they walked out, I mean, they were like, we feel so bad because, you know, loved the movie, but
yeah,
it, wow. Yeah.
I feel bad for people who spent a lot of money to see it.
Absolutely. We saw this for free. I mean, they took great care of us, but yeah, if I'd spent like,
I actually paid for two tickets for Jules and I.
Oh, wow.
I got the rest for my buddies. Yeah. So it's $23 for a movie I could hear 55% of, you know, that's.
Yeah. Oh, see, now I felt that way about Young Victoria. Those were expensive tickets and. Very, yeah, I didn't, you know, I couldn't really enjoy the film film ended up not being that good, so it didn't really matter, but, you know, I wondered about the people who'd spent, so much money. It's like, you didn't even get, sound quality aside, it wasn't even a clean, you know, well-projected print. I mean, it shouldn't be going red in the middle of the movie.
Yeah.
Which made me wonder, is this an artistic effect? I mean, this is unusual for a BBC film.
Well, and that hurts people's perspective of a movie too.
I mean, it's not the festival in general too.
Absolutely, I mean, this is purely constructive criticism.
But what can you say though about when the sound for Troll 2 is better for a Terry Gilliam film? You know,
oh
yeah, seriously? I don't like that. You know, because Best Worst Movie was presented, and Troll 2 presented very, very well, clean. I think that I said that to my mom as we were walking out. Was wow, the Troll 2 print was way better than Young Victoria.
Who would have thought?
I shouldn't say that, you know. And I don't mean to be like crapping all over, like they don't know how to run things or anything.
There are issues.
Yeah, there are some issues, and especially when you know you're really trying to develop this festival into something big on the circuit, you know, and. Attract people to come here and attract locals to attend and support the Denver Film Society. It's hard. And you don't want to see that kind of stuff. We want to look like really cool.
Well, you know, I love the Denver Film Fest. And if they just fixed the sound in the King Center, I would be so much happier.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think the whole Denver film community would be so much better off next year.
For sure. And I wonder if they could either, I mean, because I like the Tivoli, you know, it's a great little building. I wonder if there's anywhere else they could move, you know, the festival. Can they expand it to pavilions at all? I mean, maybe they can't.
There's a good idea. Like show it at the Mayan, our legendary Mayan theater, which has a really big main auditorium. That would be a good one for like Parnassus or something like that. I mean,
yeah. Or,
even the Esquire,
the Esquire.
Yeah. The Esquire, even the Landmark Theaters out in like Greenwich Village.
Sure,
I would be okay with that.
We would go see Transformers 2 there tonight if they screened that theater. Yeah. So nice, but no, they did have one movie that mid lunch. What the heck was it? Mid August lunch. Excuse me. They had mid August lunch there. It was like the one film they screened at the Landmark that was part of the film festival. Why couldn't they have shown Parnassus there? That would have been great.
There you go. If they did one, then they must be able to do more. So that's an interesting. Little fact, because I thought, well, maybe those, you know, because those are theater chains, maybe they can't use them, maybe there's some kind of, you know, legal stuff that I'm not aware of, and so that's kind of, and yeah, I definitely think like transportation might be a good thing that they could offer, like get a sponsor involved that, you know, that would be advertising for the sponsor and advertising for the festival too, that could get people to some of these scattered locations. I think that might be, I certainly would be able to see more movies if they had a way to get up to Boulder a little easier or something, sure. You know. Which, with the snow, who knows? I mean, that's going to throw the
Very true.
Into everybody's plans.
Well, you know, Elizabeth, to get to Boulder from Denver, I mean, it's a very simple thing. You got to wear a tie-dye shirt. You got to have a cardboard box, like, sign that says Boulder, and it's got to be in green pen.
Only in green. Red heard. Is negative, man. It bumps you out.
Other than
it's
that.
True. They had it at, I don't remember which departments it was at my school, but they stopped using red pen because it was too negative. They could only use purple and green. It's like, you know, if I get a paper back and it's like completely covered in green pen, then I'm going to be just as upset.
Wow. No wonder my students are so depressed. Maybe I should start doing that. I always use red pen.
Wrong! You disappoint me.
You should continue to use red. They have to learn disappointment at some point in their lives. It might as well be early.
So anyway, the Denver Film Fest.
I think overall, I think it's a pretty positive experience, especially like when it's in the confines of the Tivoli.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's excellent.
Like you said, Elizabeth, there's always a crowd there. There's always an electricity there. That's where the film geeks go to see their movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And if they can find a way to keep that going, they're good.
Exactly. And I think that's – I mean, every time I've been down there, it's been cool. It's always an enthusiastic crowd and – you know, the fact that you can buy, like, you know, food and, you know, wine and the students kind of wander in. It's cool. It's just, it's a nice place. And the theater quality has gone up incredibly. Like, the sound, I think the first movie I saw there after it became the Starz Film Center or something was, like, Beowulf and Grendel. And it wasn't so good. And it's improved tons since then. Mm. So.
Even the seating's gotten better.
Yes, it has.
Yeah.
Because I went a few years ago to catch one of the Can't Stop the Serenity screenings. And it was painful sitting in there. And it was a lot more comfortable this time around.
Yeah, it really was. Like, you know, more foot room. It seemed like, I mean, maybe we were just, you know, imagining really good things. But it seemed better. You know? And yeah, it's clean. Yeah, the bathrooms are nice, which is always a big thing. You know, it's like you want a clean experience for a movie. I hate going to see, you know, like, just because it's an independent movie, I don't like sitting in a crappy theater.
You mean you don't like going to Chez Artiste?
No.
I like the Chez Artiste.
No, actually, I do. I have more of a problem sometimes with the Mayan. I think the Mayan could use a nice.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
I think the Chez Artiste is pretty decent. Sound is a little iffy, but now that we're gonna, like, every theater chain is gonna ban us. Like,
you are not allowed.
I love all theaters in Colorado. Let it be on the record. Barry Wurst at ScreenGeeks.com.
Wow.
Sorry, too many Boulder cookies. All right. Okay. Anyway.
Shall we get into some movies then?
Yeah, let's.
All right.
Do you want to just chime in as we talk about stuff, or do you want to talk about what you saw? Or?
You saw four. What were the four you saw that you really liked?
Four I saw were, I saw Best Worst Movie and Troll 2. And then, yeah, Everybody's Fine and Young Victoria. Best Worst Movie and Troll 2, obviously, you know, really, really enjoyed both of them. Just definitely a highlight, no matter. Even if I'd seen, like, 50 films, I know that would have still been a highlight.
Sure.
Everybody's Fine had no expectation for it. Ended up being really, really surprised. I think it's a really good movie. One of De Niro's best performances in a long time. I was really, really surprised by that one. It's always amazing. Like, I think everybody just needed to hug it out after that movie because, like, it has such a cheery ad. And it was like, I really thought it was going to be like this zany family thing, like a road trip kind of movie. Mm-hmm. And oh man, like, it's so, like, sucker punch, horrible, sad. And like, you just heard the Kleenex, you know, packets, and everybody's blowing their nose. Like, everybody got up and, like, yeah, it's like everybody needed a hug. It was so sad. I don't think anybody expected that. Even when they entered the movie, it was like, well, just think of this as, like, the movie that you, think of it as the stuff you hide from your own family. And I was like, this is going to be funny. And it was not funny.
It wasn't Meet the Fockers.
No. I compared it, this is a really, really thin example. Like, don't read into it at all, but some people were asking me on Twitter about it, and I said, well, I would say it's De Niro's, like, Gran Torino. And people were like, well, what do you mean by that? And I'm like, no, okay, I don't mean that they are the same kind of movie at all. But as far as a very iconic sort of macho, scary guy, you know, actor, I mean, De Niro is De Niro's De Niro.
Outside of Stardust, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Playing a very, like, broken down, sad old man. It was it's like, it just one of those, like, wow, you feel like the cold touch of mortality. It was hard to watch, like, on a lot of levels, but that, I, as far as, like, I'm just a, like, a quick knee-jerk reaction, that's what I would have described it. Not that he, like, goes and, I don't want to spoil anything about Gran Torino, I guess, not that it's anything like Gran Torino.
He doesn't say, get off my lawn. There we go.
No, he's not a cranky old man. He, does not take on, you know, gangs of his neighborhood or anything like that. But as far as sort of like that, like, underlying thing of regretting your life and, you know, that's very much a part of it. So.
Okay.
Are you allowed to talk about it, Barry?
I don't think so. Well, I don't know if I could talk about any of these. I don't know what I could talk. I should have asked that before the show. I don't know what I could talk about because I don't think I could talk about Young Victoria. I don't know if I could talk. Can I talk about Imaginarium? Or
we didn't have any. There's nothing on Imaginarium. We can totally talk about
there's,
that.
There's nothing to talk about because we don't know what we saw. No.
I didn't get any like things about Embargo or those bad. Is that bad?
Okay, so you're fine. We'll just live vicariously through you.
I don't know. It's like I pulled media tickets, but they never gave me any like Embargo info or anything.
Well, you saw Everybody's Fine twice, right?
Yeah, I did. I did.
The first time is probably what put you under the embargo.
Yeah, you're right. That's true. I did see it a second time in the Springs at a very different screening, but, you know, I'm just going to be good.
Yeah, we don't want to get in trouble.
Yeah. So I don't want somebody like listening, like, oh, I'll just listen to those Screen Geeks just once, just to see what it's like. And then, what
the? This is the one that they'll listen to, too. Like,
yeah.
So, fair enough.
Yeah.
And then Young Victoria, you were not a fan of.
Yeah, Young Victoria is a miss. I mean, it's the kind of movie that gives costume dramas a really bad name, put it that way. I love Emily Blunt. I think she's a great actress. I think she actually does a very good job with the material. But you're talking about a historical figure that, you know, she wasn't a great queen. I mean, as far as, like, long reigning, yeah. But, I mean, she didn't do a great, you know... Not one of the top 10, like, you know, wow, really helped the poor, really, you know, cultural revolution kind of thing. I mean, you're talking about an era known for its, like, sexual repression, Dickens, and, you know, a lot of wars and, you know, imperialism and stuff like that. So you're trying to almost, I think in some ways make her more appealing, make her spirited, make her almost kind of feminist. And it doesn't really work because the historical material is just not there. I mean, you know, I think she was maybe somebody to be admired. Some of the stuff that she does is, you know, very shows that she had spirit. But, you know, she was kind of easily manipulated, easily fell under the influence of people. And the movie very much shows that. It doesn't lie, but I think it tries to sell her as, or, you know, tried to and defeated, like, oh God, we just can't do this. <You know? laughs> But it's boring, it's slow, it's not, doesn't give a good explanation to the politics of the time, just not good. But
so she was no Queen Amidala, that's what you're saying?
Yeah, no Queen Amidala. Well, I think a good comparison is like the slew of Elizabeth movies that came out. It's like Elizabeth is a, you know, Queen Elizabeth's the first very cool figure to make a movie about. You know, she did, you know, but Queen Victoria, not so much. Like, you know, I think it's very funny as far as the context of the film is, like, it is an era of sexual repression. This is a woman that was known, you know, for dressing all in black once her husband died and all that, but they very much up the sex. Like, it was, like, it shows, like, their wedding night. They get very sort of, you know, lots of soft candlelight and, you know, kissing and everything, and the next morning, and, I don't know. It just jumped out at me right away. She's like, well, I can't take a honeymoon because I'm queen, and I can only take 3 days off. And so he pulls off her stocking all sexy-like. And she's like, well, what are you doing, Albert? And, well, if we've only got 3 days, my love. It's like, wow. They're really trying to stress, like, these are people that had sex.
So that's what was missing from New Moon, right?
Yeah.
Okay. She brought it full circle.
There you go.
All right.
So those are my movies.
So which one did you like the best? Best worst movie? Your favorite?
Probably best worst movie. I think Everybody's Fine is a pleasant surprise because it just was not what I was expecting. Like, I might watch it again and decide it's a little too much of a hanky movie or something. But as a pleasant surprise, like, best worst movie didn't surprise me because I knew I was gonna like it. But yeah, that would be the best movie, and then best surprise might be Everybody's Fine.
So. Okay.
And I loved Best Worst Movie, too. It's just such a fun movie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You don't have to see Troll 2, but you're going to want to see Troll 2.
Exactly.
After watching this movie.
Yeah.
There's just no way around it.
You know, and if you absolutely can't see Troll 2, I think the best jokes are definitely in that movie. Like, you don't have to feel cheated if you never see Troll 2.
I don't know. I think the fairy tale at the beginning with the blind fairy princess was hilarious.
And for me, the shock of finding out this with the deal with the boy's grandpa is when you find out, no, your grandpa's dead. Like, that he's like the imaginary friend, this boy's dead grandpa. For me, that was such a hook. I'm like, no matter where this movie goes, I will follow it because the boy has a dead grandpa as his imaginary best friend.
Well, don't forget
he's the poor man's Burl Ives too. Like the way he talked and everything.
Well, and here, okay, this is something that's going to get me that's hate, great. But oh well. But like the main bad girl, whatever the villain is, yeah. Tell me she did not remind you of Helena Bonham Carter in the Harry Potter movies.
Sure, sure.
Oh my gosh, I was like, that's a little disturbing. That's really sad if that's where they got that from.
And I don't know. There was something. It was sort of like a poor man's like Jesse Custer about like that from the Preacher comics about like the preacher guy. I don't know. There was something going on there that was like vaguely familiar to me.
Well, that was intriguing because I'm watching this and like this movie is kind of like a statement against like, you know, going into like religious cults. But that would be giving the movie way too much credit, way too much subtext.
It's also like. The whole, like, finding out it was basically, and I'm a vegetarian, like, a screed against vegetarianism.
Yeah.
Really odd, like, especially at the end, like, it gets so, like, the toxins and below.
Yeah.
Like, wait, you're preaching against that? I mean, what? I don't know.
That's right, yeah, because, yeah, you bologna sandwich is what saves the day at the end, right? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
and triple decker bologna sandwich.
That's, excuse me, yes, that's right.
And don't forget all the gay subtext in it, too. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
When they walk in, when he walks into the Winnebago.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
None of it's meant to be there.
Yeah. I saw Troll 2 first, and I that made me love Best Worst Movie even more. I think the two really complement each other. I wish there was like a two disc of those two movies together. That would be perfect.
It would very much. Because there are things that are in Troll 2 that you don't even get a glimpse of in that documentary. And. Like the corn scene, and which also adds an interesting gay subtext. Like she's only able to seduce that guy when she's holding a phallic ear of corn. I mean, there's something to that. I'm totally gonna try that with a guy. Like put a corn in top of my mouth. Like yeah. I'm like what? I'm like never mind. This relationship is over.
Depends on the guy, you know.
I'm sorry, Gerard Butler. This is over.
Or some movies that you loved, Barry?
Some of the ones I loved? Let's see. I guess starting from the top. Oh, shoot.
There's so much to go through. Yeah.
There's a few I can't talk about, so I'll just skip those. And I'll go back to them at the end of the year and be like, and I love this one at the Denver Film Fest. But as far as the ones I know I can talk about, Cropsey. Frickin' love Cropsey. This is the documentary from the guys who live on Staten Island. The gist of Cropsey, really quickly, is that there was a series of child kidnappings during the late 80s. And the children of the town had a pretty good idea who it was. They kept saying, it's Cropsey. It's this urban legend of this guy who like lives underneath the tracks and he used to live in a mental asylum and he comes and snatches kids. And meanwhile, the adults are running around going, no, we need to find who it is. Well, they find the guy, or at least they think it's the guy. It's still an unsolved mystery to this day. And the guy apparently is Cropsey. He is the urban legend that these kids have been so terrified of. And they have footage that Geraldo Rivero took of the asylum where Cropsey apparently is from. And that footage is among the most terrifying I've seen all year. Scary than any 5 minutes of Paranormal Activity. This movie is so scary because it's true. And it's riveting from the first scene to the last. I freaking loved Cropsey. Great crime thriller. What else? Hicktown. Good documentary about Mayor George Hickenlooper, the mayor of Denver. Even if you're not from Denver, you'll find this movie totally edge of your seat. It's great. It's about not only what he has to do as the mayor, and he's a fun mayor. He's totally goofy, kind of a real laid-back guy. He, like, goes on races up and down his steps, like, with his security guards when he gets bored. And you see how he deals with the Denver Democratic National Convention when it came here last year. You see, like, all the joy and all the rapture stuff going on inside the Pepsi Stadium, but then you see like the riots that are breaking out outside, all the turmoil and all these reporters running around. I mean, Hicktown is a terrific movie. I recommend that one highly. Win or Lose, a summer camp story. One of my favorite movies of the year. Love this film about camp at summer at Camp Ojibwa, this all Jewish boys camp, and the ridiculous stuff that goes on during collegiate week. I would describe it quickly as saying it's like Meatballs, except it's real and it's really, really funny. Definitely go see Win or Lose, a summer camp at all costs. The Good Soldier. This is a really good film, really hard-hitting movie. It's five war veterans who are in four different wars talking about how the war essentially turned them from soldiers into killers and how they have to deal with that, and sometimes how it's hard to go back into society and be able to turn that off. Really deep, really complex. It is an anti-war film, no doubt, but it's done with a real measure. You never feel like it's a guy in a soapbox. You really feel like it's guys who really know what they're talking about. Official Rejection, which you and I loved.
Oh,
great
so
film about the indie festival circuit. Great, great movie. It is not only a must for film lovers, but a must for anybody who is a first-time filmmaker or wants to, you know, hit Sundance with their new movie. You definitely need to see this film. And two more. The one that we all talking about, Best Worst Movie. Love that film. And, you know, this was a really great year for movies about movies. And specifically, there was one that Julie and I saw called Tales from the Script. Terrific documentary about basically the art of screenwriting and what screenwriters go to.
I wanted to see that.
It's really good.
Yeah, because everybody's fine ran into that, so I didn't get to see it. Yeah, it sounded really cool. Like, anybody who wanted to be a screenwriter should check that out.
Absolutely. It really is. Like, Dave, you will love this. There is a priceless, priceless story that Guinevere Turner, she's the screenwriter who wrote the adaptation of American Psycho and Blood Rain. She talks about working with Uwe Boll. It is one of the best stories I've heard all year. You will freaking love the movie for that scene alone. I swear, the whole time I'm like, oh, Dave's got to see this. Yeah, you will freaking love this movie for that reason alone. Tales from the Script comes out next year. There's so trying to figure out a release date, but the release is going to be in conjunction with the book of the same name, which has all this stuff that they could not put in the movie, like transcripts of really great interviews from great writers. But yeah, Tales from the Script is top notch. So those are just the 10, just to pick 10 that I really loved.
Can you talk about
which one?
Touching
Home. Oh, yeah, Touching Home.
Yeah,
absolutely.
You liked it.
Yeah,
I'm like,
I didn't
want to put you in trouble.
Yes. No. Thank you. No, that was just 10 I just wrote down randomly. Yeah, Touching Home, I loved, by the Miller Brothers. This is with Ed Harris in a role that, and I say this, and I realize the ramifications of it. This is one of the best performances he has ever given, which is saying quite a lot. It's a supporting role in this film, but it is Oscar worthy. He plays this homeless alcoholic father, and Logan and Noah Miller. I need to speak a little more clearly. They wrote and directed and essentially put this movie together from scratch. It is based on their experience with their father. It is a rich and emotionally complex movie. I love this film. It was really well done. It is a first movie, but man, it is one of the most accomplished first movies I've seen. And for that matter, Hal Holbrook was there with the movie called That Evening Sun, where he received an award for. And this, I would definitely say, is like Hal Holbrook's Gran Torino. Absolutely. It is about a cranky old guy who decides to ditch his he ditches the retirement home that he's in, goes back to the house that he used to live in, finds that a total redneck jerk has taken over his house and his whole plantation. So Hal Holbrook plants himself in the yard and basically has this battle of wills between the guy who owns his house now. And the stuff they do to each other is just astonishing. It's just like this mental and physical mind game they play with each other. And Holbrook is fantastic. And the movie is great. And apparently it's going to be a movie coming out this fall. It's one of the big Oscar films. Terrific film. Dave and I, we really liked Con Artist.
That's going to be
film
on my list. Yeah, it's a movie about, Mark Kostabi.
Kostabi.
Such a unique name. It's kind of hard to remember at times. Who studied under Andy Warhol,
mm-hmm,
and essentially had other people paint stuff. He signed it and still sold it for $12,000-$15,000 and was totally honest about it and open. And it's a fascinating look at someone who had like the eye of the art community, have all that press, all that attention get pulled away, and him trying to get back in the limelight,
mm-hmm,
in very, very odd ways. Has the most random Michel Gondry cameo I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
Because he has a public access TV show where people name these random paintings. And at one point, Michel Gondry shows up just to play drums with the house band. Really? Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, really great about just the whole notion of what is art and when and can something still be constituted art even though it's been passed over by many hands. If an artist signs it, even though he really didn't do any of the work, he just came up with the concept. Really interesting stuff and really great look at like what the art world was in the 80s when post-Andy Warhol, the art world became so commercialized and so slick and, you know, it became like buying a car in a sense.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, when he talks about when everything drops off the market in Japan and – it's kind of – you feel kind of bad for the guy because he
– Kind of.
He's absolutely a tool. There's no question about it. We might be getting an interview with the director of that too, so I'm working on that. Actually, we're going to. I just need to set it up. I guess I'll move into mine. Official Rejection is amazing. It's like in my top five for the festival for sure. Might be in my top 10 for the year.
It's a great movie.
It's so entertaining. What I love is that we saw a lot of documentaries here that challenge the notion of classic documentaries. Whether it be, you know, the Ken Burns style or something about, you know, a Holocaust of some sort. A lot of the movies we saw this year show that you don't have to have that. Whether it be Best Worst Movie, whether it be Official Rejection. Even Beetle Queen Conquers Tokyo was a charming little movie.
Hmm? Yeah. How was that? Because I really, really wanted to see that, and I couldn't get away from my laptop in time to go see it. And
it's very well done. No question. It is fascinating. You will learn a lot about Japanese culture and the way the Japanese view insects as something, you know, that they could share space with and not throw a shoe at. Being the total gaijin that I am, the whole time I'm watching the movie, I wanted to throw my shoe at the screen. I just think this is disgusting. If I see a beetle in my house, I'm going to crush it. I can't imagine like having a beetle as a pet. I think I was telling Dave there's a scene where you actually see like this leaf and this little antennae very slowly comes up and you see this little buggy face looking at you at the camera. And I was so grossed out. This movie grossed me out big time because like I can't imagine like going to the pet store like, yeah, like a cockroach and a beetle and
I want to pay $50 for a beetle.
Yes, but I got to say it is fascinating because there's that great line where that guy's driving a Ferrari and he goes, I got this Ferrari selling beetles.
And the cinematography is gorgeous in this movie.
Yes, it's a beautiful film. It is.
Yeah, and what's very interesting is written and directed by a lady named Jessica Oreck. We got to talk to her. I haven't posted the interview yet.
Cool.
But wide as the day is long. Not a trace, you know, and it's very interesting to have such an outsider's perspective but feel so inside and really have grasping that culture.
Yeah.
I thought it was really good.
Yeah, really fascinating.
Even Orgasm Inc., we have to bring that up.
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah, Orgasm Inc. Yeah, don't let the title fool you. It is not a sleazy, exploitive film. This is a humorous and yet very serious and very informative movie about female sexual dysfunction.
Yeah. What I loved is they know that people are going to laugh. They know that there's the joke there. When they go to the Vibrator Museum, they let you laugh, yes, get the joke out, and then present their side of the argument, which really worked so well, I thought. It was captivating. I was like, I don't know if I want to watch this, but okay, we'll give it a shot. You know, we got the screeners. Why not?
Yeah.
And yeah, it was a very pleasant surprise, I thought. But yeah. I just love the fact that we're getting this whole new generation. I know these movies are never going to be in Oscar contention. You know, if a movie like King of Kong or Eric Guitar Nation isn't going to happen, it's sad, but it's good to know that there are better movies out there than.
Well, that was one thing I talked to Louis LaPat, the director of Win or Lose, a Summer Camp Story, about. You know, he's saying like, you know, I know my movie, you know, it's not about war or the Holocaust or Kosovo. You know, I made a movie about summer camp. It's what I'm passionate about. I'm like, good, man, good. Your movie stands out. It is niche, and that's the wonderful thing about it. I love it that there's documentaries for all. I mean, for Pete's sake, there are documentaries about the Denver National Democratic Convention. There are documentaries about bugs. I mean, there's something for everybody this year.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was a good thing to see on the schedule, even if I didn't catch as many. I really wanted to catch some documentaries, and you sort of look at it and there's still an emphasis on that, like, you know, there was that, and I'm sure, you know, no slam on the movie at all, let me stress that, but like, you know, after the rape, and it was like, you know, that is not the documentary I can make myself go see. And I'm glad that we're starting to see a shift, you know.
You're not saying, hey, honey, let's go see After the Rape. This will be a great time.
That was another one Lewis and I were talking about because he's like, I will not see a documentary that deals with rape. I'm like, you mean you're not going to go see After the Rape? He's like, no.
And it's just, there's something, it almost makes you feel guilty looking at the schedule because you don't want to see those kinds of movies. And yet I don't know if there's anything wrong with that. I mean, yes, those are stories that need to be told. And there are probably braver souls than I that will go and see them. But I don't, you know, I had a professor once that was all she used to go see. Like, you know, I don't remember what, like, I think Hidalgo had come out of the theater, and I was like, you should go see Hidalgo. It's a nice movie about a horse. She was like, no, I'm going to go see the movie about, like, the Holocaust and the Jews that betrayed the other Jews in the camp. And I was like, you know, I can't remember the name of that movie. It had David Arquette in it. And that
Yeah. The Gray Zone. The Gray Zone.
Yeah, The Gray Zone. I thought so. And I was like, oh, I don't, maybe that's not the name of it. But I was like, you know, I don't think you need to see that movie. I just don't think you're going to learn anything. I'm sorry, but go see the movie about the horse. You know?
Well, you know what? Let me throw this out really quick, because there was one that I was very reluctant to watch. They gave us a screener for it. It was one of the sold out films of the festival, and I was very hesitant to watch. And it's an amazing film. It's called The Horse Boy. I was reading the description. It's about this couple that basically go overseas in search of finding the cure for their boy's autism. I thought, oh, that's going to be fun. And it is – I mean, no question, it is harrowing. You see, their boy is a highly functional autistic kid. I mean, which is to say that he screams, he cries, he can't go to the bathroom by himself. I mean, the movie does not flinch in showing how horrible this kid's situation is, and what a exhausting ordeal this kid's parents are going through. But then you see the really out there, crazy, but really interesting remedies they take in trying to find a cure for this kid's autism. It is a moving depiction of what these parents find and how they bond close together. And the ending, which I will not spoil, but I will say that surprisingly, it offers a lot of hope. And it offers the kind of hope, the kind of solution that I think a lot of parents who have kids who suffer from this severe kind of autism would look into. And I thought, this is really interesting, because this movie is, in a sense, offering its own version of a cure. So made me think, has Jenny McCarthy seen this? Like, have so many, like, autistic advocates seen this movie? And all that to say, the movie, you know, no question, the subject matter is heavy, but this was one movie where you don't walk out feeling like, oh, God, I just got, like, you know, just beat across the head with a swastika. No, I walked out of this movie so moved and so touched and thinking, man, I feel like I actually learned something. But, you know, the movie, the best documentaries, they are like great movies. You know, they tell great stories. And this one told a really terrific story.
I think that's, it's a shift that the genre is thankfully making and has to make if it wants to survive, because it's become sort of a terrible cliche. I mean, you hear people kind of making those snarky jokes at the Oscars. Well, I know which documentary is going to win, you know?
Yeah.
And then you're right.
About the Holocaust. And it's like, you need, not that there aren't important stories to tell about historical events like that, but my God, there's other important stories to tell.
Absolutely.
Like about autism or even, you know, best worst movie. I think there were some things in there that, you know, were sort of, that's why I liked that. It was such a universal, yes, it was funny. It was this goofy thing about Troll 2, but there was also something in that movie that just was about, you know, being the practical person and giving up your dreams for having, like, a real life and a real job. And there was a lot to, you know, going on there that I think that you can tell lighter stories or even offbeat stories and still have an incredible universal message without going, hey, I'm going to make the movie about rape and Nazis and, you know, genocide and get my Oscar. I mean, I almost feel like sometimes they're doing it as an Oscar bait and cheapens the story in a way. So I'm glad to hear that, you know, this year's Denver Film Festival had a good crop of documentaries.
And the funny thing,
starting,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay.
I'm done.
The funny thing is, one of the last documentary I want to talk about is actually about communism. So it's called The Power of the Powerless. It's actually about – we were beaten and killed and tortured. It was about the uprising that happened within the youth in Czechoslovakia against the Socialist Communist Party. And it was fascinating.
Yeah, and I mean, that's a very positive story. I mean, Czechoslovakia or Czech Republic as it's known now.
Yes.
That is like the epitome of like the bloodless, you know, the Velvet Revolution. And I've always wondered, like, why aren't there more movies made about that? And then, like, my gut tells me it's because it's not like gut-wrenching and horrible.
Well, it was fascinating to me. First of all, they got Jeremy Irons to narrate it, which never hurts at all.
Yeah, that never. It's like he could narrate about like the most boring thing.
Don't read the phone book, pretty much. Yeah. But the cool thing is, it was recent enough. I mean, we think of communism as falling 40 years ago. This happened like 20 years ago.
Oh, yeah.
And pretty much everybody involved with the revolution was still alive, and they interviewed every single person. And so you got this full picture of everything, as opposed to just talking heads. You had the talking heads talking while you have the picture of them when they were like 16 years old trying to start this revolution. It was amazing.
That's awesome. I wish I'd caught that, because it's a subject that fascinated me in school and still does. It's a great story. And yeah, one that really should be championed a lot more. And it's disappointing that it isn't, because it is such a positive, like, you know what? You can do these things without a horrible bloodshed.
There is that, yes. Yes.
And I mean, not that I'm saying I'm somebody who likes violent movies and gut-wrenching stories, but it really is a great message, that whole thing. And, you know, instead of telling the stories about, hey, you know what, you know, there was a genocide in Rwanda and we did nothing, maybe talk about something
that positive that happened from the people from within.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And the last movie I want to talk about is a little one. It's another horror movie. Keith Garcia programs some great midnight horror stuff. But The Revenant, it is one of the oddest movies I've ever seen. It's about a guy who gets killed in Iraq, gets sent home. They bury him, and his best friend hooks up with his girlfriend or whatever. You know, it's just that whole grieving process. And suddenly, for some reason, they never, ever explain, the guy comes back to life.
It's like Brothers. But
yeah.
Well, wow. This is Brothers with like black gooey vomits zombieism. And
did you see this?
I did.
Okay.
Yeah, I did see Revenant. Yeah.
It is a dark pitch. I would say it's a pitch black comedy just about.
Yes.
Like, it's almost like a zombie version of Boondock Saints, I think you could say.
Yeah, I would go with that. I didn't like it quite as much as you did, but I got to say, it did stay with me. And I loved, which I won't discuss at all, but the ending.
Yes.
Which was so like, wow, this is going some really inventive and shocking directions. I really liked it.
It had a good story. Essentially, it's a story that when he comes back, he's neither vampire or zombie, although he's got traits of both. So he's called a Revenant. I guess that's the name for it or whatever. And it's his buddy trying to help him get blood so he can stay alive. But at the same time, you know, dude dies every day at dawn. And so he's got to carry him up the stairs every single morning back up to the apartment. It's so out there.
So
but
it's
yeah.
almost like Brothers by way of Black Hawk Down, like leave no man behind.
Right, right.
Interesting. But that was one I was like, I'm not interested in that at all. And now I'm like, God, I really should have gone to that midnight movie.
I was surprised at how good it was. I was really surprised. It had a good budget. I mean, it had great production values.
Very well done.
Especially in said ending.
Absolutely.
We can't spoil.
Definitely. Yeah. Yes, yes. There's one that you saw that I want to bring to the map, because you saw one of the biggest things of the fest. I didn't get to see this one. You saw Pollywood, the Barry Levinson documentary.
That was very interesting. The setup of the film is, I forget what the lobbying group is of the actors. But it's a bunch of actors who essentially went to the Democratic National Convention, the Republican National Connection, and the inauguration. And it's kind of their...
Is the Film Actors Guide from Team America? Sorry, go ahead.
Wow. Well done, sir. Well done. The thing that was very interesting was it kind of gave the actors a chance to say, you know what, everyone gives us so much crap for saying what we believe. At the same time, if you had that same platform, you'd be doing the same thing. And it was very interesting. You had various people saying, you know, I don't know as much as I need to. And the reason I'm coming to these things is because I want to find out more. I want to learn more. I want to become more informed. Which really, like with Anne Hathaway, I really, you know, appreciated that with her. Rachel Lee Cook, she really came off the best, because she was one of the few people who actually went to the DNC and the RNC. And it's essentially, it's about that journey, but it's also Barry Levinson's argument that politics has become an entirely different animal and has dumbed down politics because of TV. And he like quotes like JFK saying how much the invention of television is going to destroy politics. It's going to become a giant popularity contest. And he quotes the fact that, you know, when you had the Nixon-JFK debate, people on TV, JFK won. People who listened on the radio, Nixon won. And it just kind of skews the entire political process a lot, which I think you can make a lot of argument for these days. But one of the things that struck me the most was a scene where Rachel Lee Cook's getting ready to get out of her limo to go to the RNC. And she's nervous. She's like, these people think blah, 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 sounding like she's spouting off the rhetoric. Stops in mid-sentence, says, you know what? I'm jumping to conclusions. I don't know what these people think. That's why I'm here. And it really just gives you a lot of respect for a lot of these people. And it was a fascinating look. I really liked it.
Great. Yeah. And she was there, Rachel Lee Cook.
She did. She introduced it, and I think they did a Q&A, but I had to run to, I think, our interview with Michael Stevenson and George Hardy. So, which was worth, you know, running away from.
Heck yeah. Heck yeah.
Yeah. But I dug that a lot. Do you want to talk about some of the major disappointments at all? Like major films. Like, I don't want to hurt small films' chances.
Well, you know, I got to say, I didn't see anything this year that was as bad as Donkey Punch last year, which I was very vocal how much I truly, truly, truly hated Donkey Punch. That was one of the midnight movies last year. Garbage movie. Nothing this year was anywhere near as bad, but what are you thinking of?
Well, you know, I just realized I actually saw 15 movies, but I totally forgot that I saw Precious.
Oh, yeah. Wow, you forgot you saw that.
Yeah.
Man, who would have thought? That is the most talked about movie in America. I mean, didn't you see it on Oprah? I mean,
no.
Oprah loves this movie.
Yeah. Did you hear she's retiring in 2 years? Okay, sorry.
Only for her, yeah.
Yeah, only until she starts her own network.
What did you think of Precious? Because I'm almost sensing some backlash for that.
We can talk about it now.
Yes,
it's a Denver. Yes, we can talk about this movie.
I will say, yeah. First of all, I went into this movie knowing essentially nothing. And from what I'd been led to believe, it seemed like it was like a true story of a person. Were it a true story, this would have been one of the most phenomenal movies of all time. Seeing as it's not, I have seen after school specials with less freaking drama than Precious. And there's two sides to this too. I also never thought in my entire life I'd be saying Monique, Mariah Carey, and Lenny freaking Kravitz can act. But they can, and they do an amazing job of it. So there's a lot to like in the movie. I can see why people are saying it's kind of exploitative, though.
Yes, yes.
To subject one person to that much stuff, you just... And then we didn't get any payoff at the end. I'm not going to ruin the ending, but there's zero payoff.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm completely in the same boat with you, Dave. The performance is amazing. Gabourey Sidibe, who plays Precious, I always believed her performance. Mariah Carey is astonishing because I'm married to one of the world's biggest Mariah Carey fans. I've seen Miss Carey in concert, and so I'm very familiar with her work as an actress, unfortunately, and she's a terrible actress. In this movie, I didn't even recognize her initially. I thought, oh, they get kind of a girl who looks kind of like an ugly Mariah Carey to play this role. No, it's Mariah Carey, and she's astonishing. Lenny Kravitz didn't even recognize him, and Monique, I mean, if she wins the Oscar, it's totally deserved. The performances are amazing across the bat. I thought it was so over-directed. That the fantasy sequences are dreadful, dreadful.
I will admit, I laughed at the part where they're trying to eat in the black and white movie.
Yes, stupid. It was a stupid scene. It's like, you know why they're there? Because, you know, this is what a girl who has no friends would fantasize about, being famous, being a movie star, being a pop artist. But the
execution was awful.
Awful. Terrible. He has just such a way of over-directing every single scene. Not only would I go towards exploitation, there is a review. You know, I don't like to let other critics at all influence what I write. But there is a critic who wrote for the New York Observer. He wrote a review of this movie. He called it the most irresponsible movie about race since The Birth of a Nation.
And, oh, gosh.
I mean, he hates this movie, The Passion. I don't hate it that much. In fact, I don't even hate the movie. I just don't like the film. I think it's the most overrated of the year.
I gave it a 7 out of 10, okay. But it's not a perfect movie by a long shot.
No, it's got so many problems. And I do agree with him that the scene where she steals a bucket of chicken, I thought, you know, what a
it's so
awful
random
stereotype right there. Yeah, like the scene, like, oh, and then she vomits it later on in graphic close-up. It's like this, yeah. Yeah, this movie is not going to help anyone. And, it, you know, forget off our political high horses. If this was about a fat white boy who was abused by his redneck father and his redneck mother who molested him,
we'd be making Deliverance jokes.
Exactly, exactly. But we're getting all, oh, you know, this movie's going to elevate the black people. No, it's not. It is not. Fat girls, fat African-American girls, you know, for years in high school, you know, guys are going to be like, ah, ha, ha, she's precious. I mean, these are harmful stereotypes that this movie is creating, and this harmful stereotypes, I think, a lot of which that this movie is exploiting. The scenes. Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead. No, go ahead.
I was just going to end it by saying the scenes in the classroom, which are supposed to be so amazing. I love Paula Patton as the teacher.
Yeah, she was great.
She was terrific. But didn't the scenes feel like outtakes from Dangerous Minds to you?
I was thinking ahead of the class, but.
Well, there you go. I'm being much nicer. All right. Go ahead, Elizabeth. You were saying?
Well, about the stereotypes, like, and you brought up Oprah before, and she even made a quote like that I was like, wow, that, I mean, oh, damn, Oprah. Like, about, well, I mean, I see these girls every day, like when I'm driving by in my limo, that's the black girl I see on the corner, and it was like, oh my god. I mean, number one, I drive by my limo and I wave at the poor people outside, and then the idea that, you know, if I see a fat black girl, I shouldn't say fat, overweight black girl, she must be molested and she must be pregnant and, you know, have like a children with disabilities. I mean, I thought that was the worst quote I've ever heard from somebody who has a, you know, been a very good, I guess, role model.
Let alone one of the executive producers.
Who gets a shout out in the movie, I might add.
Yeah.
And all respect to Miss Winfrey, does she really need a shout out in a movie she's producing?
Yeah.
Well, I think she and Tyler Perry threw their
all. It's like, God, Oprah, boy, nobody's heard of her.
I think that she and Tyler Perry threw their names on to try to get this movie some buzz. Yeah. I don't think they had anything to actually do with the actual production.
Right,
the film
got made, and then they picked it up in the festival circuit.
But
very overblown, insulting statements. I'm sure Oprah thinks saying something like that is a helpful thing and trying to say that this is a story that happens every day, but saying that you drive by in your limo and immediately jump to that conclusion about every African-American girl you see is disturbing and says a lot in its own way about the kind of images that that's going to present to a wider movie-going public.
I'll say this very quickly, but I'll get this off my chest. I never thought I'd have an opportunity to talk about this. The two reasons I don't like Oprah Winfrey. One, she owns a huge frickin' property on Maui, and she is never there. She owns a house the size of a hotel. She's never there. I hate that. And two, she did a special recently where she was talking about how she was trying to be like a normal person because she's lived in privilege for so long. They do this wacky segment where she tries to put gas in her car, and she doesn't know how to do it. She doesn't know how to operate the machine.
So it's turned into Oprah's Simple Life.
Right. And I was so angry. I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. Because I understand she's got limo drivers and stuff like that, but she doesn't even know how to put gas in her car. I was just like, you know, yeah. And the audience is all laughing along. Like, this is not funny. This is a tragedy.
Well, I felt the thing that I would get off of my chest about Oprah was just recently that school. And I know that, you know, they were a lot of stuff was exaggerated in the media, but that school that she opened in, is it South Africa? I was kind of shocked at that. You know, not number one, that you have that much money and you open like maybe what, one school, two schools, which is nothing in the grand scheme of an entire, you know, continent.
Let alone doing it, you know, over here where there's plenty of problems too. I'm just saying.
Exactly.
And doing a special about the school that you open up in Africa, a 2-hour special called Oprah Opens a School for the Children by Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah. And the fact that there was, and there was, as a girl, there was an element of it that I understood where she has like classes basically in makeup and beauty and hygiene. And while that's very uplifting to a girl to, you know, maybe make herself look pretty, and obviously there's health reasons and stuff that you should emphasize things like hygiene or whatever. Not that I'm implying that South Africans, you know, maybe need that all. But there was just something about that. It's like maybe that some of that's the last thing a girl from South Africa needs. You know, you're talking about like an entire continent that like AIDS and rape and so, you know, I mean, there's just tons of stuff going on in there that maybe a makeup class is not going to be like, maybe that's something you can introduce later on. I was really the special and like the photos went along that special where she's like hugging girls sort of looking out into the distance, you know. There was just a lot of it that was very heavy-handed and, you know.
To bring it back.
I don't want to sound racist. If it was a white person who had done that, they would be people making white man's burden jokes. So let's just leave it at that.
Okay.
She gets away with a lot because I find very racist in her own way, so.
To bring it back to Precious, I've heard so much about how awful this movie is. I seriously expected The Black Requiem for a Dream.
Yeah,
it was nothing close to that.
No.
And I mean, in ways it was tasteful. I think they did the rape very tastefully.
As tasteful as a rape scene can be, sure.
Yeah.
I'll give you that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, granted you have daddy and his sweaty gut as he's undoing the belt. Yeah, I mean, that was kind of a little much.
For me, it was still horrible. But no, you're right. It could have been worse. They could have gone farther.
Yeah. So I'm not saying it's an awful movie, but
it's not a great movie. No.
Sold. And I didn't get a chance to see it because, I got snowed in really bad on this end. But, it's just some of the things I'm hearing about it are really interesting, and it's gonna be one of those things that causes some shockwaves, I think, for a couple of years to come.
It's doing well. It made $11 million over the weekend. That's really good.
Yeah.
It did better than the, you know, per screen average than that rock movie, Planet 51.
Okay.
So...
He needs to go back to doing action movies.
Yes, he does. violent action movies with bloodshed and explosions and well, no cute kids.
One in pre-production, I can't remember what the name of it is, and I remember what I wrote. I was like, thank you know, for all those people really need an action movie on the rock. He's listening to you at last.
yeah. There are two movies I want to bring up. Two more I want to bring up. First of all, I did really enjoy Youth in Revolt. It is as pretentious as Brick. I think that's a very fair thing to say. Just in that there's no way that teenagers talk that way. I mean, when you've got Michael Cera in a video store and he's talking to, you know, the hot chick he wants to talk to, and she's like, what have you got there? He's like, oh, it's La Strada. You know, it's the Criterion disc. Part of me is like, yes, it's a Criterion. And then she's like, oh, my God, that's so random, and then walks away. And it's a very funny movie once you get past the pretentious factor. I couldn't stop laughing. There were lines of dialogue that were missed in the theater because everyone was laughing so hard. But how old's Michael Cera now? He's in his 20s.
Yeah, 23 maybe? 25 at the very most.
He needs to quit playing 16-year-olds. I'm just saying. Like, this is getting into, like, yeah, bad 80s teenager movies.
Don't you think he's kind of got the Cusack thing going on, though? I mean, doesn't he look, like, forever young, don't you think? No?
To an extent, I think he is settling into a Cusack type of thing where he keeps playing the same guy over and over. Yes. I just find Cusack more talented.
That's what I was going to ask. Like, I heard people going, well, anybody who's worried about Michael Cera should see Youth in Revolt. And now I'm like, I didn't hear a lot coming out of the festival that he really shook that Arrested Development image.
His alter ego, his Tyler Durden, if you will, was actually pretty fun. He kind of broke out with that. But it's not a perfect movie, but I laughed really hard. And we should bring up in the Air, since I was the only one to see it.
Yeah, I can't talk about any of these movies. Go ahead.
Yeah, yeah. Did you see it?
No, I haven't seen it yet.
Okay, okay. I know that certain other sites have just been so over the moon and doing all kinds of weird things to promote this movie. It was good, but I didn't love it. Hmm. Vera Farmiga totally deserves to at least be nominated for her supporting actress role. She was outstanding in it. Clooney was even good. Like, everyone's good in the movie. There's just no subtlety to the film.
Hmm.
Like, everything is spelled out by the end of the movie, except for what happens at the very end. What's Clooney's next step? Beyond that, there's nothing that's left to the imagination. And I was kind of bummed by that, because I like Reitman.
I've seen a lot of backlash on Twitter so far about it, so I don't think you're entirely alone yet.
Okay. Well, I'd seen basic, you know, tweets here and there but saying how good it was. I hadn't seen a trailer or anything. Same thing with Youth in Revolt. So I like seeing movies cold like that.
Yeah.
It was interesting. Like, I skipped the screening on Sunday thinking I was getting one tonight, and yeah, they got canceled, so... I was supposed to come to the plate with more, but but yeah, it was kind of interesting because, like, it started all of a sudden last night, like, just suddenly, like, this backlash. I was like, wait, I haven't seen it yet. It was really odd. Like, after everybody was like, yeah, up in the air, oh, now I don't like it. It was like, whoa, guys, let's chill.
Yeah, it's definitely not even in my top five for what I even saw at the fest this year.
Gee.
It's a decent movie. It's just not that amazing thing. It was cool when J.K. Simmons came out to introduce the movie. I'm not going to lie.
Nice.
Because he's a very cool guy. But other than that, you know, I was kind of...
So that was the who introduced it. It was... You were right about it being an actor.
Yes. Yes. We were kind of talking about if Jason Reitman was coming out for it. But I found out that they had...
Go ahead.
Well, I found out they had the Junket the same weekend.
Okay. So that made sense. Like, I saw people... Like, I interviewed Jason Reitman. I'm like, well, then he's not going to be in Denver.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that was, like, the hint I got in the email was that he was going to be down here. So, yeah, I guess some stuff must have changed.
But overall, I've been very impressed. I was very impressed with the programming this year at the festival. You know, we were treated very well by everyone there, from Becky Farrar to Tammy to Abby. I mean, everyone took good care of us. Keith Garcia did great doing the midnight screening programming. Yeah. Had a great time this year.
I feel bad I didn't get down there as much as I wanted to, and I hope to in years to come. Hopefully it'll be... I'll have my stuff together better.
Fair enough.
And as long as Oprah doesn't listen to this episode and have us permanently banned from the Denver Film Festival. And,
hey, she might be. You know, she's...
You know, we're not that big. I'm just saying.
Not so much how... Yeah, it's not the size. It's that, you know, she has people everywhere.
This is true. The walls have ears. Yeah. So you enjoyed the festival this year, Barry?
I really did. I loved it. So many terrific films. Unfortunately, so many I can't talk about because they were screened for me in a in a critics, like, I, you know, they, like, they're, I told you those bunch, like the Michael Douglas film Solitary Man and Young Victoria and Youth and Revolt. I'd love to talk about, but I can't. But we can talk about Bad Lieutenant, can we?
Oh yeah,
yeah,
yeah. Well, that's what I was saying earlier. I mean, it's crack cocaine Nicolas Cage. I mean, how do you go wrong? Apparently, you can't.
But I didn't think it was that over the top, though. Like, I thought the film, no, they had outrageous moments, but to me, like, it wasn't ridiculous. It was just, it went in some very, like you said perfectly in your review, some really surreal moments.
I'd almost call it a surrealist, absurdist film, because the absurdist part comes at the end. And I think you're right. It pokes film at the resolution of all these cop movies.
Yeah.
Because you hit this point, and it's just like, it's almost something you expect out of The Family Guy, the way that they resolve it out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God.
It is the most random. It is a glorious movie. I think that it is going to bomb because people don't deserve a movie this good.
I hope you're wrong, but you could be right, though. But I hope you're wrong. I loved it. I really did. I mean, you and I were cackling almost the whole way.
Like, halfway through the movie, I'm like, should I be laughing at this? And then you're just, you know, I'm along for the ride. Like, when they have, like, 5 minutes of iguana shots looking at Nicolas Cage in the background, it's kind of like the thing in The Simpsons when Sideshow Bob steps on the 47 rakes. It's funny, it stops being funny, and then it becomes funny all over again.
Yeah.
Like, this is my... Oh, yeah, yeah. It's the second Herzog film I've ever seen, and I can't wait to go find more of his movies.
You know, yeah. I actually, it was funny when I was on Flickcast, I touted this, but there was a ton on Netflix Instant if you
Ooh.
Are feeling the Herzog love. That's what I've been doing. Like, been my last 2 weeks. Like, I'm going to watch, like, all of Werner Herzog that I can. And, yeah, they've got Copra Verde and Aguirre, Wrath of God up, and Fitzcarraldo, like, all his Klaus Kinski.
Terrific.
And they have My Best Fiend, which is his documentary about how much I hate and love Klaus Kinski, which I haven't gotten to watch yet. I'm anxious to. And there, it's weird. Like, his movies are definitely very serious, but, like, if you watch Cobra Verde, I think that there's seeds of probably what Bad Lieutenant, which, again, I haven't seen, how that comes to be, because I got the impression, as serious as that movie is, it was sort of like, if I tie Klaus Kinski up with some rope and then beat him with some sticks, I wonder what might happen. that movie just feels like an extended exercise in, you know, things I could do to Klaus Kinski and he won't kill me. Basically, if they'd untied him in some of those parts, he might have killed everybody.
Oh, no, go ahead.
Oh, no, I'm done. It has to be seen to be sort of believed.
I think one of the funniest things is when he snorts something he thinks is cocaine and isn't. And he's like, it's, you know, and he says what it is, and that's when the movie just kind of kicks into gear properly.
Yeah, yeah. For me, when the craziness, like, when you kind of realize that the movie means for you to laugh, that it really is a dark comedy, is the scene where he goes through his medication. Remember, that scene was so funny, and the whole audience was laughing. I said, okay, we're allowed to laugh at this. We're not laughing at a so bad it's good performance. Cage is finding the right tone for this movie. He actually found a movie that is perfect for his manic overacting for once, and it actually fits. And he, you know, there was something that Willem Dafoe said really, really quick, not to digress. Willem Dafoe, being interviewed about Antichrist, they said, you know, some critics say you're really over the top in this movie. He said, hey, man, for some people, you know, it's over the top. Other people, it's tour de force. All I can do is be honest. And I think Cage is honest in this movie, unlike Ghost Rider, unlike The Wicker Man, or even those stupid National Treasure movies. He's really giving the material the juice that it needs.
And you bring up Ghost Rider. Eva Mendes was good in this.
Yeah, who would have thought? I've never liked her before in anything before this movie.
Yeah, and when you have characters, I mean, when they play the fact that characters around him are going to drug rehab as a joke, I mean, it's just a beautiful thing.
The only complaint I would say is that Val Kilmer, I thought, was really
barely in the movie.
Barely in the movie, so I thought kind of misused. And especially, like, I mean, how excited you see Kilmer and Cage in a movie. And, you know, and like, Kilmer almost, in a sense, you almost get a sense he's kind of, like, shrugging back going, Cage is over the top in this. I'll let him do his thing. I'll do my thing in my movie.
Yeah, and Exhibit was even kind of fun in it, too.
Yeah, he was really good, I thought. I really liked his performance.
I'm like, the Pimp My Ride dude? Really? Okay, sweet.
Everybody, I loved it. Jennifer Coolidge.
Yeah, I was like,
unrecognizable.
Halfway through the movie, I'm like, that looks like her, but it can't be. And you get to the end, it is. Holy crap.
Jennifer Coolidge, Michael Shannon as his partner, Brad Dourif. I thought he was great as his bookie. Yeah. Yeah, great cast.
It's just good all over. Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, this is – I don't know if it's one of – I haven't decided yet if it's one of my favorite films of the year, but it's one of the most fun times I've had.
It's getting honorable mention at bare minimum.
At the very least, yeah.
Because it's a movie no one's going to see, so you can't stop talking about it.
I hope word of mouth carries it, because I got to say there's nothing else out there like it, even remotely like this.
It opens on Christmas. No, it's opened already in New York.
It opened in New York and L.A., and then Thanksgiving it opens a little more in other cities, but we're not getting it, I don't think, until December. Wow. And then, you know, whenever it hits wide, hopefully good word of mouth and curiosity will make people go to the theaters and, you know, they'll want to see something other than, I love you, Bella. Yeah.
So. I know I do.
Well played. Well, shall we talk about what's hitting as our wrap-up for this year's 2009 Stars Denver Film Fest? It was a very fun festival.
It was a great time. Thanks for everybody who had us. We'll definitely cover it again next year. And seriously, other than the King Center, it is a fantastic, amazing experience. Those of you who are listening who are curious, come out and see it. It is one of the most laid-back things. I didn't get to say very quickly, I got to meet Ed Harris. It was the most casual thing in the world. It is always like this, where they have people come to promote the movies. They're just hanging out in the theater, in the lobbies before and afterwards. You know, you can meet the filmmakers at these events. It is better than con, because 9 out of 10 of these films are already bought and paid for. So they're at the film festivals for you to see, not for somebody to buy them.
Except for a lot of the documentaries.
You're right. Yeah. And I want to say, Win or Lose, A Summer Camp Story is still up for sale. Somebody, especially Judd Apatow, needs to buy this movie and release this film, because it needs to be seen.
And I believe Best Worst Movie does not yet have a distributor.
And that's a crime.
That's amazing. Yeah, amazing to me.
It definitely beats one. I would like – somebody needs to buy that one, because it is. It's just – it's such a good movie. I mean, to say it's a documentary about Troll 2 really almost undersells it.
No, it's really more about George Hardy.
It's about George Hardy, and it's about people who love movies so much, whether they're in them or whether they watch them. I heard about this film on like Entertainment Tonight like earlier this year. I'm amazed it doesn't have a distributor.
Yeah,
it's a great film.
It's weird. It's like – and because of, you know, it having such a following in Austin and kind of having – I think, you know, grown up there. I'm really surprised, because Austin has such a strong community of filmmakers and film lovers that I can't believe it. Nobody's grabbed it, but.
Yeah. Well, hopefully that'll change very soon.
Rodriguez, come on, you've got a company.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. An Official Rejection has released on DVD, actually, this past Tuesday. So
great.
It's only on Amazon right now, and I think they're going to do the streaming, the whatever, their Watch It Now, whatever it's called. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, so Amazon On Demand, that's what it's called.
Oh, people need to see that.
Anyhow, next year's going to be even more fun, I think, because hopefully we get to see more stuff. I might actually take more time off work to come up during the week to catch stuff. And,
That was a big mistake I had, and I apologize to Denver Film Festival for tripping and falling on that point, because, man, there were some things I really wanted to see during the week, and, God, they got slammed with some deadlines, and that sucks.
Yeah, I wanted to see Fish Tank and just couldn't make it work. I was bummed.
Pollywood, I was dying to see, but it was on the same night at the same time as Touching Home, and it was the one time Ed Harris was going to be like, do I go see a Barry Levinson movie that I'll probably get to see, or Ed Harris in my lifetime?
Yeah. And I may have to, you know, send some emails and try to get a screener of Touching Home, because, yeah, I was snowed in. I could not get out, and I was so pissed.
Yeah, it's a great film. It really is. Very impressive.
Just the clip that I saw during the Ed Harris thing was like, I can believe it's one of his best performances.
Yeah.
It's just the 5 minutes against all his other performances was like, wow. You know, when you get that whole line from The Right Stuff all the way to that one, it's like, this is a good performance.
Very true. Totally. So, all right, let's talk about what's hitting theaters this Thanksgiving weekend, you know, like in 2 days, because there's nothing hitting on Friday. It's going to be Wednesday.
Well, happy Thanksgiving, everybody. Wes Anderson's fantastic Mr. Fox.
Yes!
With George Clooney, Meryl Streep, and Bill Murray.
You're banned, aren't you?
I am, but oh, it's so good! Ah! Also opening up The Road with Viggo Mortensen, Charlize Theron, and Robert Duvall. In limited release, Richard Linklater, the director of Dazed and Confused, Scanner Darkly, some of my other favorite movies, Me and Orson Welles, starring Zac Efron and Claire Danes. Don't let Zac Efron fool you. This is supposed to be really good. This is about the theater world in 1940. It's supposed to be a really, really engaging comedy. Again, don't let Zac Efron fool you. Ninja Assassin. This is with Rain, who was probably one of the few highlights of Speed Racer. He was the one guy who was actually doing martial arts. Everybody was in their cars. Rain has his own starring vehicle now. And Ninja Assassin, you know what? Everybody I know in Maui is dying to see this movie. So I hope it's good. It looks like fun. And then Old Dogs. John Travolta, Robin Williams doing a paycheck movie, Old Dogs. Yeah,
how could I have passed up that screening?
But just a movie called Old Dogs.
I know.
How could I have passed up that screening? My conscience doesn't care. Okay.
The trailer kind of summed it up, don't you think?
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those horrible things. You know how, on Facebook, it'll say, are you attending this particular movie event? I don't know if you guys get those. And it asked me if I was going to attend Old Dogs, and I went, no. And then it said, 234 people are attending, from your friends list. It's like, who are these people?
Are they really my friends? That's the question.
Yeah, I had to think about that. I was like, I should find out and maybe delete them.
I'll say this really quick. There was this really great article in Variety. It was the spring when Ghost Rider, Wild Hogs, and Norbit all came out. And, those movies were all big hits, those three movies.
And the apocalypse didn't happen?
The Horseman was at the theater. But anyway, what's that?
I don't think of Ghost Rider. I think of that as being an older movie than Wild Hogs for some reason.
I know, yeah. Well, they all came out at the same time. And what I thought was interesting, because the article pointed out, is they took a survey, and the consensus was, those movies look like fun. They didn't look like swear movies. They didn't look like intellectual movies. They weren't movies about the Holocaust. They just looked like fun. And, for whatever reason, people had fun watching Norbit. I can't imagine them having fun watching Norbit, but they had fun watching Norbit. And, I saw Wild Hogs, and I got to say, stupid, stupid, stupid. I did laugh a few times. I'll admit that. It's like a sitcom, It is what it is. Ghost Rider is awful, awful, awful. But, sometimes people just want fun.
Yeah, it's true. There's nothing wrong with indulging in fun. You just maybe shouldn't indulge in that kind of fun too often. Find some other kinds of fun.
Well, it's like Twinkies. You can only have so many Twinkies before you get really, really, really sick.
Not 20 Twinkies.
Yes.
Maybe go see, Bad Lieutenant. Just a different kind of fun. Or,
well, that's a chocolate covered Twinkie. Let's be very clear about that.
Deep fried Twinkie.
Yes, that's a good Twinkie. That's the best Twinkie you will have all year.
Laced with heroin. Yes.
Put that in the poster. I want to suspect that will show up in one of their other Bad Lieutenants. if you haven't read it already, Chud has a great list of ideas for other Bad Lieutenant movies.
Oh, like Bad Lieutenant, like Port of Call, Denver, or?
Yeah, it's sort of, I can't remember if they actually are assigned, but it's like directors and actors and everything. And I know one of them was Terrence Malick's Bad Lieutenant. I can't remember where it takes place, but it's all about praying mantises and stuff. It's really funny. Devin Faraci did a really great job on
it. Sweet, that's in chat. I'll check that out.
Yeah, you'll want to see all of those movies, I think.
Cool.
Very cool. Sweet. Well, this went way longer than I expected, but it was much fun.
It was. Elizabeth, thank you for joining us. That was awesome.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yes, and we can find your work at cinemanical.com, and you're doing some stuff for flickchart.com, right?
Flickcast.
Flickcast, yeah. Sorry.
Flickcast.com, which I just now remember. I keep typing in flickcast.com. It's like, why isn't it coming up? But it's certainly theflickcast.com.
Fair enough. We'll link to both of those in the show notes. Thank you so much for joining us.
Yay.
Cool. And we might do an episode on Thanksgiving. It depends on when I get back from Grand Junction. We'll see. But until then, this is Dave.
This is Barry.
Take it easy.